Okay. Oh, now you both say it. You're waiting for all these outsourcing favor by Republicans and the news. To order, we need, we're trying to hope that we have first thing in your folder is we haven't, we're not going to do, I'm just kind of passing this on if it's without objection, but we're not doing it until tomorrow when we hear the one bill is on it. This is the State Government Finance Division recommends the following priorities for capital investment finance. And one of the ones is the capital building restoration funding. It's not clear at what level that is. Bonding for a Tier 3 data center, which is a high priority on my part. The bill that we're not going to do, I just put this out for information so that people could look at it. And then the Department of Military Affairs asset preservation, which is, this is what was left over from last year. We asked for $7 million on that. And the reason I'm not paying as serious attention to this as we could was that last session we spent an incredible time going over and doing our priorities really carefully and so forth. We sent them to capital investment where they were totally ignored. So, you know, so this time I'm just sending on kind of what I think is reasonable, and if there are any objections, they can be raised. But I'm not doing it until, I'm just putting it out for information that this is tomorrow, because we're going to deal with Terry's bill tomorrow, which has to get to them. I don't know what happened to this session. It seemed to me that just limping along with nothing to do, and then suddenly it's over.
Did you want us to get back to you if we have comments on
yes,
it?
Yes.
So we have more
sure.
time to think about it?
Sure.
Nice?
Yeah, that's right.
But
we'll do it.
More.
Right. No, we're going to do it tomorrow.
We're going to do it
tomorrow. Yeah. And, you know, if there's unanimity in taking something off, we'll take it off. So. Although I hope we could pass it as it is. Okay, let's when you understand that it really doesn't mean very much. At least it didn't last year. So, okay, there is the quorum. So Representative Winkler moves the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are passed. Okay, we're now starting with the discussions on what would it be like if we tried to do some outsourcing of some of our data systems. And we're starting with Lynn Willenbring, who is the Minneapolis CIO, and representative from Unisys, who are the people who are running their system.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Lynn Willenbring. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the City of Minneapolis, and I am very pleased to be here today and talk to you about the Minneapolis story, or what Minneapolis has done in outsourcing some of our information technology. The title of my presentation here is Information Technology Sourcing, because there are multiple ways that you can actually source it, and it's not necessarily that outsourcing is the only way to go. Essentially, there are three different types of sourcing. You can do everything in-house. You can do some contract work where you have people either on-site or off-site. And then you can also outsource or have a managed service. It's two words that essentially mean the same thing. And it's really a continuum from in-house to outsourced, as you can see along that arrow on the bottom. I'd like to point out that outsourcing is very, very different than offshoring. Offshoring means that you've taken your work off the United States, some other country. It has nothing to do with who is doing the work. So you can do it in-house and offshore. You can outsource it and keep it onshore. And that's actually what Minneapolis has done. What Minneapolis has done is a full information technology outsourcing. What that means is that we have our network monitoring and support, our data center operations, including all the items listed there, our service desk, which is staffed 24/7, our guest site support, and we've also chosen to outsource our asset ownership and refresh for our desktops and servers and laptops as well. But even though you outsource, you still need to retain some functionality within your own organization. What Minneapolis has retained is our application support, our project management, which we do jointly with our service provider, our solution development, which we also do jointly with the service provider, and then our enterprise information content management, our telecom operations, our quality assurance, and absolutely most critical is the governance. Without the governance piece, none of this would work. Ultimately, an organization needs to think about why you should outsource. And I'm going to show you five reasons here for outsourcing, and these are listed in the order that Minneapolis used when we made the decision in 2002 to outsource our information technology operations. First and foremost was our desire to focus on our core competencies. We realized that running a data center, doing desk site support, monitoring the network, was not where we wanted our IT department to be focused. Rather, we wanted to focus our IT department on accelerating business transformation. We wanted to be full partners with the business side of municipal government and ensuring that the residents of Minneapolis got the best service they deserved from our organization. And that meant we couldn't be busy running around trying to fix desktop computers. We needed to be looking ahead to how we could accelerate our business transformation. We also want to improve our performance. We realized with limited government finances that we were never going to be able to do everything in the way that we wanted to do it. But we wanted to do the best service that we possibly could with the limited dollars that we had available. And we recognized that 24/7 operations was something that we would never be able to afford if we were staffing it ourselves. And like most other organizations, we were always looking for ways to reduce costs, and we believed that we could outsource and reduce our IT operational costs. And last but certainly not least, we wanted to have access to advanced talent that we could never afford to have on staff because we didn't have the need for them 40 hours a week, 50 weeks a year. Rather, we would have access to them when and if we needed them. So as we went about the implementation, we had three steps. We actually went out for an RFP. We entered into contract negotiations with our selected service provider, and we engaged our union to ensure that things were addressed properly, that we addressed the concerns of our IT staff that were going to be affected by this outsourcing. As a result, this is the agreement that we entered into with our service provider and our employees. They were going to hire up to 20 employees that were within the scope of the agreement. The employees had the first right of refusal. There was position availability within the Twin Cities so that the employees did not have to relocate. They actually got a signing bonus. They had a 3-year employment guarantee. They could only be discharged for cause, not for just a general layoff or anything like that. Their seniority transferred intact over to our service provider. And as you can see, the benefits there, they were fully vested based on the seniorities if they'd worked for Unisys for all those years. We actually had 13 employees that were transferred. 10 of those employees still remain working for Unisys today. 2 chose to leave in the last 5 years for other opportunities, and 1 actually was dismissed for performance after 5 years.
So the guarantee did go beyond the 3 years then. They were kept on after the 3 years.
Madam Chair, the guarantee was only for the 3 years, but there was no reason to let anybody go. It just this person had a performance issue. Mm-hmm. The timeline that we looked at was we had a 7-year outsourcing agreement that we entered into in December of 2002. It took us about 5 months to migrate our data center from our existing data center to the Unisys data center. And then in 2006, we did a midterm analysis. We hired a consultant to do an analysis to A, validate our business case. Did we actually prove out what we anticipated? And to assess the contract delivery that we have since we were at the midpoint. In 2007, we did another independent evaluation looking at whether we should recompete or renegotiate with our current service provider. And in December of 2007, we signed a new 5-year contract after we had renegotiated it. Some of the midterm analysis findings by this independent third party were that they did, in fact, validate $18.2 million of direct cost avoidance through outsourcing in our first contract. We had, our business case was that we would save $20 million. We were slightly off, but a 10% deviation when you're projecting into the future was certainly within standard deviation points. And so we were very pleased with that. They also showed that the overall process and performance improved. They did quite a lengthy analysis and had a very detailed scorecard to show this, which included a 30% improvement in our IT operations capabilities, or our ability to deliver our technology services throughout the city. And last but not least, this is a quote directly from that evaluation. It said that the city on its own could not have advanced to the current state within the same time frame if we had not outsourced.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
If I might, could you let us know what the size of Minneapolis's budget and number of employees are, just so we can extrapolate the size of your organization to other state agencies for comparative purposes?
Madam Chair, Representative, certainly. However, let me just caution you that I would warn against completely just extrapolating because there are different factors involved. But my current IT operating budget is $26 million a year, and currently I have 90 staff.
And if I might, how many employees are there in the city of Minneapolis as a whole in the budget, if you know, approximately?
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe the current staff complement is close to 4,000. Oh, I'm sorry.
And the amount of the city's budget per year?
Madam Chair, Representative, the city's overall budget is $1.4
billion. And if I might, the 4,000, I'm assuming, includes your police and fire and everybody.
Yes.
All right, thank you.
Representative Dennis?
Thank you, Madam Chair. See, on the contract renewal, was the first contract structured in a way that there were certain renewal provisions guaranteed to the city, or was there a hard end to the first contract and a straight-up renegotiation for the renewal?
Madam Chair, Representative, the initial contract had a hard end, and it would have been a renegotiation or recompete. What we actually did was that contract was not scheduled to end until December of 2009. We renegotiated early. We felt that there would be some benefits to both us and the service provider to renegotiating and ultimately extending, because now our current contract goes through 2012. Okay. One of the things I was asked to talk about today was if Minnesota should look at outsourcing. And my question to this committee would be, are any of these needed today within state government, focused on core competencies, improving performance, et cetera? These are the standard industry reasons for outsourcing. Again, these are listed in the order that Minneapolis focused on them. There is no right or wrong order. But if any of these are a need for Minnesota today, then outsourcing is something that should be considered. One of the things I've noticed in my years of service, public service that is, I have worked for over 20 years in government, and we have definitely shifted from the traditional focus on information technology as hardware and desktop computers and the old CRTs, and really looked at information and data as a service. It is actually an asset of the organization that needs to be addressed as such. One of the other things I've observed is that there's a large problem with parity across the small agencies compared to the large agencies, the haves and have-nots. I worked for the Department of Revenue for a number of years, and I had the extreme privilege of working with a number of very, very talented IT people. They were fortunate, and they were one of the haves, and they were able to do a lot of great things because they had the capability. There are a lot of agencies out there today that are struggling because they don't have those types of resources because they're smaller. When you look at things like desktop support and help desk and web hosting, these really are commodity services today. It does not mean that the staff are commodities, but these are standardized services that a lot of organizations can contribute to state government. They can do as well, if not better, because they are doing it with economies of scale, and they have the expertise in all of these areas. In addition, predictable technology costs and funding is always a struggle for government as we deal with shrinking budgets and difficulties in managing what's coming in the future. One of the things Minneapolis gained with outsourcing is those predictable technology costs, at least over the term of the contract. And we have built in things to ensure that if technology costs go down, our costs in the contract go down as well.
Did you do a machine information, essentially machine upgrade at the same time you did this with everything?
Madam Chair, actually we have built into our contract a 4-year refresh on all our desktops and laptops and a 6-year refresh on our servers. So that is just built in. So we've had too many problems in the past with funding, leaving it to our individual departments to fund refreshing their computers, and then suddenly everything is out of date and it can't run the new things, and then we have to do this major uplift. So we actually put those terms in our contract. That is something fairly unique in the outsourcing world, is that we actually have our service provider that owns our computers and our servers. That is not necessarily the standard in the industry, but we found it to be very effective for our users. And last but not least, we were able to achieve an annualized 12% IT operational cost savings year after year. That in and of itself is a huge benefit to us. And so in conclusion, I found this quote that I think just essentially captures it. We cannot meet 21st century challenges if we continue to operate with a 20th century bureaucracy. The state actually has a long history of outsourcing those activities that are not core and essential to government operations. Information technology should receive serious consideration for that. Information services, ensuring that the taxpayers of this state get the service from government they need through information technology, that should remain in the government domain. With that, Madam Chair, I thank you and stand ready for any and all questions.
Madam Chair, one question. When you said you were doing some evaluation or performance evaluation, who did that, and what were some of the things you were looking at?
Madam Chair, Representative, we actually used Excipio Consulting to do this. They have expertise in the IT industry, particularly in evaluating outsourcing agreements. We looked at things from the service desk to our disaster recovery, our project applications, network support, security. We have a list of about 12 different areas that they focused intensely on.
Thank you. Anyone else? Any questions?
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And until we can get back to you if you have other questions. Okay. We have Richard Kolodziejski. I've got to learn to pronounce that over the years.
Amazing. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Richard Kajewski, the Legislative Affairs Director for the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees. I represent nearly 12,500 professional degreed non-supervisory employees, and included in that group are all the state IT employees that are non-supervisory. MAPE has a major concern in the governor's budget. His budget contains approximately $16.5 million in appropriations to assist state agencies to make a transition to a consolidated data center. He has $2.91 million for migration and consolidation of servers, and the remaining $12.235 million is to lease new data center space and facility management from an outside provider. The Office of Enterprise Technology has testified that data in industry publications they receive does not necessarily prove that outsourcing is actually cheaper. It's questionable whether data center consolidation can actually save money. If it can, I would ask you, why have we only consolidated, in part, one data center from the Department of Revenue in the past 2 years? State agencies are inherently decentralized, bringing into question how a shared data center would even work when departments don't currently collaborate. As a former union rep for the Office of Enterprise Technology IT employees, the partial consolidation with the Department of Revenue went anything but smooth. The fact of the matter is, folks, is you do not have to have legislation to consolidate the state's data centers today. Aside from the cost related to leased data center space, there are many aspects of outsourcing data center management to take into consideration. Let's consider the city of Minneapolis, for example. The city of Minneapolis is required to pay to contract for all of their IT work. Unisys, their contractor, even outsources some of Minneapolis' work to another vendor. When any IT work is needed with the city of Minneapolis, they have to do a work ticket that's completed at the price of $220 just to fill out the ticket. And as the question was already asked, the state government is about 12 and a half times the size of the city government in Minneapolis. Unisys, or the outsourced company, then bills for their completed work. For example, moving a computer from one desktop to another desktop in the city of Minneapolis costs approximately $400. That computer moved at the rate of $400 can take somewhere between the area of 2 to 3 weeks. Staff time and salaries can be and are wasted while waiting for repairs. The city of Minneapolis, another example, had Java 1.6 loaded on a block of computers at the cost of $15,000 taxpayer dollars. May not mean a whole lot to all of us, but Java 1.6 is free software that's available to all of us on the internet. Minneapolis does not own their own computers, as their CIO stated, and any desire to change back to city-owned equipment could be problematic and even more costly. Once an initial contract is up, they're also on the hook. All your equipment is gone, and you need a new contract and are susceptible to a much higher rate. Outsourcing data center space and consolidated servers will cost the state of Minnesota the customer service that they also now benefit from. Additionally, it will likely require travel from a distant location. And I think we have to remember that most of state government, at least when you speak of the central offices, is located right here in the downtown area. We could run into situations where the only person able to access a private document with someone outside of state government not technically authorized to view that private data. Perhaps the most concerning issue to me and most people that I discuss this privatization with is the data that we would be sending to a non-governmental resource, and that data does include things like BCA data, DHS-related benefit payments, the state's data network, Department of Health information, corrections, Attorney General information, and public safety data. OET holds data for every sheriff's department in the state of Minnesota. They store data for the criminal justice information system used by law enforcement and corrections in this state. And I urge you to ensure that data is not entrusted to a private company in this state. Today, some of the federal government agencies are even taking back outsourced work. But what happens if a vendor goes out of business? Is there a concern today that these companies have undergone massive layoffs in some instances? The cost of their stocks leave the future of their companies even questionable. Madam Chair and Representative, MAPE information technology employees clearly do top quality work. in outsourcing, there are stories and examples of failure as well. And I give you one example. Texas at one point halted IBM's $863 million data center consolidation last October, involving 27 state agencies citing data loss. The deal was supposed to save taxpayers $25 million in the first 2 years, but after 11 months, a private accounting firm put the net savings at $500,000. Connecticut's governor nixed an outsourcing deal with EDF back in June of 1999 due to too many risks. EDF could not provide the state with assurance of technology upgrades throughout the contract and would not give the state an out clause if they were dissatisfied with the contractor's performance. Outsourcers do often guarantee employment for 1, 2, even 3 years for those employees whose work is being outsourced. Yet employees lose their state jobs, their union protection, and benefits in return. It sounds like the right thing to do, but outsourcers benefit and have to hire a large share of employees initially because those employees help to transition from government service over to private service. Then the number of employees are scaled back and the costs remain or even increase. When outsourcers get your equipment and all of the control, you've lost what you once had. Gone with the belief that consolidation and outsourcing would save money. OET and the governor's office have presented you with a budget that provides OET with additional funding in a time of a major deficit. I've read the agency's narratives on this issue. Much of the information on outsourcing focuses on equipment needs. It leads one to believe that major data centers are old, outdated, and vulnerable. Members, I can assure you that MAIT supports efficiency in state government. And I assure you that OET has not had a major failure since I've been involved in state governments, and that's been over 13 years. Unlike the 3 to 5 that they predict in the summary over the next few years, and I've testified here previously on, they do disaster recovery drills, at least biannually. They do have cameras and video recording, as well as commercial-grade power and cooling in their major data centers. I can also assure you that some of the small boards and agencies could benefit from consolidation in available space at the Office of Enterprise Technology. You do not have to outsource to consolidate and be efficient with some of these small data centers. I read you just part of the agency-level narrative that was in the governor's proposed recommendations, and it talks about a steering team comprised of agency CIOs and OET management guided the creation of a business case, which was completed in 2007. The enterprise IT governance process approved a planning phase, which is now underway. A detailed assessment was recently prepared on all state data centers and facilities. Members, I bring this up to you because the assessment, confidential as it's been referred to, and maybe still in draft form, has been done by one of the companies standing to obtain the $12.235 million for lease space. The survey portion was done in part by Unisys. Their summary has Unisys on the front page with Excipio and has their title on every single page of the document. They are one of the vendors making a case to get on contract, and I tell you this for one reason. There has not been 1 ounce of employee input from employees at the Office of Enterprise Technology, not 1 ounce. In conclusion, MAIT believes the state of Minnesota should bond for the building of a new data center owned and operated by the state of Minnesota rather than pay for leasing space for many out years to come at an undetermined and increasing rate. The governor's current budget proposal leases space. Maybe it's concerned that leasing space could be in a location already set up as a data center. Leasing space in a private data center will make it extremely difficult to ensure that the data center is operated by state employees. It will be operated by employees from that specific company. So with that, Madam Chair, I thank you for the opportunity, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, I have one question. Mm-hmm. One of your conclusions, which was the same as one of mine, differed from a whole bunch of your premises, which is, I believe that we should bond for a state data center and then should discuss how we're going to run it. But I come from the fact that we need consolidation of all of the various data centers in state government. And you started saying we shouldn't have any of this consolidation. We should leave them all separately, which is going against what a lot of CIOs and states are saying now. But then you come to the conclusion that we should, how do you put those statements together.
Madam Chair, members, there is some space at the Office of Enterprise Technology. The last time I was in the server room, I think that some of the small agencies could benefit from it. I think some of the large agencies might be able to benefit from it. But they all are so unique in their own ways. I'm not so sure, and certainly the Office of Enterprise Technology could speak more to the partial consolidation with the Department of Revenue than I could. I can speak to it from an employee standpoint, but I guess my concern is I'm not so sure that that's saving the state any money. And certainly if you're not going to get the cooperation and drag yourself from other agencies, I'm not so sure that the consolidation of major data centers, unless it's more efficient and cost savings, or the data center is lacking in many other ways that should happen. If that is the case, we absolutely do support it.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You actually asked one of my questions, but I'll ask another one. Relative to the project moving forward, assuming that it did, would your organization be interested in actually proposing a state government, state employee-run solution against the other private sector bidders, and actually kind of trying to establish in a more formal way the value proposition of maintaining the data center, or running the data center consolidation project and then maintaining the data centers going forward in kind of a managed competition way?
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, let me answer that question in a couple different ways. If you're asking if MAPE is in the business of putting in an RFP to manage a data center, I don't think so. If you're asking the question of would we be interested in working on a proposal with the Office of Enterprise Technology on how to do this more efficiently or in a different manner than it's currently done using state employees, absolutely. So I'm not sure I'm answering your question, but I can speak from what I suspect, and that is we're just not in the business of managing data centers. We don't have the kind of money to purchase one to begin with.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't know if the committee discussed this in prior years or not, but you made the comment that the consolidation at the Department of Revenue went anything but smooth. Can you expound on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Holmberg, yeah, several issues took place. Number one, the employees received lack of notice, number one. They were told, I have to go back and look at the actual date. It was like on a Thursday or something that they were moving on a Monday, and that they were going to be moved over to the Office of Enterprise Technology. They didn't have an opportunity to meet with any of their reps to answer questions on things like seniority and issues that they have real legitimate concerns about until the same day that we were informed, and we didn't even know why we were called into a meeting. The day the meeting took place, it was actually the evening prior at about 6 p.m. that we were even notified of that meeting to be there to help employees get through the situation and answer their questions. Part of our conversation took place with the Department of Revenue. They absolutely were not happy with the move, and that was from management involved in that process.
Madam Chair, if I might, so your comments to that were around like employee rights, mm-hmm. and everything, not the actual goals of the consolidation, the cost savings or whatever. I mean, there were reasons why that was done.
Sure.
Do you have any comments or information that would talk about the actual service to the state, if you will, or the consolidation process, whether it was the cost savings or anything in that realm?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Representative, I'm not sure to date that I've seen any figures on whether or not there's been cost savings. When they consolidated that part of that data center, they moved the same number of FTEs over to the Office of Enterprise Technology that the Department of Revenue had, and the funding that went with it. So unless OET has different information, I'm not aware that there was at least an initial cost savings on that. And do you want to repeat the other part of that question? Most of my experience comes from representing the employees. We did have conversations with management through the meet and confer that lead me to tell you that they were not all that willing to move. And you referenced the services that were provided. I'm not aware that revenue was not providing services to the extent that they actually, that resulted in having to consolidate that portion of the data center to begin with. So whether or not its services are being provided better or worse today, I would have no inclination to tell you that services weren't being provided before to give you an indication of that one way or another.
Well, Madam Chair, I mean, I understand you as a union rep, you know, your main focus is around consumer or, you know, worker rights and work environment and contracts, et cetera, but I would also have to believe that MAPEP puts a high value on the taxpayers of Minnesota getting a good value for their dollar, et cetera. So I'm just wondering if you have any comments or feedback in that vein. You know, was this a good thing for the consumers? Was this a good thing for the taxpayers? You know, I mean, we as legislators, of course, have to balance out a bunch of competing interests, and I heard a lot of really negative comments, and so far I haven't been able to ascertain whether there was a value to the taxpayer or not. I understand there were some concerns to union employees, but I'm not getting a full picture here.
I'm also, you don't seem to remember, although it's always hard to go back and think you remember everything. You don't seem to remember any kind of employee complaints at the time that was happening. So we'll...
Madam Chair, Representative, I can tell you that the employees were not happy with the notice that they received and their lack of ability to meet and get their questions answered before the move. I'm not sure if that came back to the legislature or not. Again, I don't know how else to say it. I was never in a meeting, and I represented the Office of Enterprise Technology when I was a rep. We had another business agent who represented the Department of Revenue, and we were in... The employers are obligated to engage in a meet and confer with this process, and we did have those meetings. Never once were we told about that this was taking place for any cost savings measures at all. And as I indicated before, I have yet to see that this was done and has produced some sort of cost savings to government. To answer your question, yeah, we are interested in making government more efficient. Absolutely. We spent $50,000 during the interim coming up with government efficiencies that we reported to both House leadership and Senate leadership that was solicited input from our employees on making government more efficient. And we have, there has been some steps taken to do some of these measures this session. But I can't put my finger on the Department of Revenue savings. I really don't have that.
Yeah, Madam Chair, is this list of efficiencies only available to the House and Senate leadership, or would that be available to minority members as well? Well, I'm trying to find out. They said $50,000 and came up with all these efficiencies. I haven't seen them. I would be happy to review them if we're sharing them bipartisanly.
Madam Chair, Representative, they were not top three, and I'd be happy to make an appointment with you and come bring them.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other? Representative Pepper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just, as long as we're talking about providing information, in your testimony, you talked a lot about some of the problems that have been encountered with outsourcing. You mentioned 2 weeks to move a computer, $120, I think it was, to fill out some kind of a ticket for services. And then you talked a little bit about problems encountered in Texas and Connecticut with outsourcing. And I'm wondering if you have any kind of format to provide that information to us. I hadn't heard that before, and I would be fascinated to see more information as to where you got that. Some of your anecdotal information from.
Madam Chair and Representative, those were from specific articles, and I'd be happy to provide those to you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, to that point, we have Mrs.
Yes, I was about to do that too.
I mean, I think she could comment on the decisions that were made about Minneapolis.
Comment about how things have worked in Minneapolis. Something that I haven't.
Madam Chair, thank you. Essentially, when you talk about creating a ticket to get any work done, absolutely yes. That is industry standard best practices for any well-run IT organization, And I know that the Office of Enterprise Technology has a ticketing system as well. Without a ticketing system, how do you track the work to make sure it's getting done within the service level agreements that you have with your customers? How do you monitor trends and get ahead of problems before they become enterprise-wide? A ticketing system is absolutely essential. As to the cost to move a computer, no, it does not cost $400 to move a computer. But there is a cost. If employees are busy moving computers, they're not doing something else. So what we've done in Minneapolis, and this is what Minneapolis has done, not what our service provider has done to us, we have a cost to that. Because before, we had supervisors saying, I want Johnny to sit by the window today, and next week, no, we really want Johnny to sit over in this cube. And every time you're moving the phone, you're moving the computer, all the connections, mapping the printer drives, et cetera, et cetera. There is an opportunity cost for that. So now our departments do see that opportunity cost as real dollars to go against their budget.
And Madam Chair, if I might, it was stated that every work ticket was $220. Is there a standard cost for every work ticket, or does it depend on the work that's on the ticket?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, it clearly depends on the work that's on the ticket. If it's a break fix, something's wrong with my computer, it's not working, there is no charge whatsoever. That is part of our base contract. If I want to add new software, most definitely there is a charge.
Thank you.
Okay. So we... Representative Kipler?
Madam Chair, that's just my question.
Oh, okay. Okay, thanks. Well, I think people will still be around. We're now going to... Teddy Rose is going to talk to us about the background from the other states and IBM's experience.
And, sir, it'll take me just a moment to get settled.
Okay. Okay.
And Chairman, members, thank you very much for allowing me to be here today. I'm Teddy Wells. I'm a director with IBM, and I've worked in their managed services organization for the last 10 to 15 years, providing services to state and local government. So I've also had the honor of running a few of the projects. One was specifically for the state of California, as well as I did actually begin the management of the state of Texas project. What I'd like to share with you today, just for just a few moments, is that IBM has been a presence in Minnesota for many, many years. We have over 5,600 employees. Our annual salary payroll is almost $500 million, as well as the fact that we've done quite a bit of work with the state itself, including DEED as well as the OEP, as we've been working with them. Additionally, we're also a trusted provider for the state. We actually do many of the data backups for the agencies as well as Hennepin County, so that we're actually here in business working alongside the state. I know that these are the issues that many of you face as we're looking at the 2009 and going forward, as well as which the CIO just shared with us also. This is something that we've all seen. This is actually one of the data centers in Texas that we took over. And if none of this is ever done on a plan, it's normally what evolves and emerges over 10, 15, 20 years. In fact, the back of my TV sort of looks like this. And this is what we're usually faced with as we go in to try to make things better. The issue is not how it looks today, but the issue is when there is a problem and something breaks, how do we fix it? How do we know which piece is broken? I wanted just to add a number of points to the CIO's presentation about what managed services really is. And as she just states so very well, the jobs remain in the state if you like, we'll have them remain in the United States if you like, and then if you would like us to use other resources, we could. but it's very standard across state governments that we normally keep the employees in the state because that's where they'd like to have them. And speaking of employees, one of the most important things to us are the employees that come over. They are very valuable to not only the operation that we would run, but they're really valuable to serving the state. They bring not only their IT knowledge, which we normally improve and help them with, but they bring the knowledge of operating their agency. They understand what it means that we don't move computers normally in the month of April and Department of Revenue, as well as child welfare always has uptake of information and things going on in September when school starts. So they're very, very valuable to us. One thing about IBM and just our experience is we have about 150,000 people around the world that run managed services. More than 50% of those individuals actually came to be part of IBM in a managed services contract. We also have a 95% retention rate, so that when they arrive, they normally stay. They normally are happy and like it. We've been talking a little bit about getting to the efficiencies. This slide itself talks about the different stages of how best you can utilize your computer equipment and making sure that you're getting the best out of it. Many states take a stage-by-stage approach, moving up the business value, whereas in two states I'm going to talk about today, just a little bit of information for you, state of Georgia and state of Texas, that by doing a managed services contract in those states, they were actually able to move from a stage one, getting improvements, all the way up to stage five. Additionally, there's been reference to these investments that need to be made. The bottom chart shows actually what we call the bubble. This is the information that describes the investment that needs to be made in order to improve the services of not only the data center itself, but the operation and to refresh the equipment. What happens is we can provide a level managed services cost to the agency, and we can make that investment up front on your behalf and accrue those costs over the life of the contract to smooth it out. We actually then postpone our gain to the back end of the contract. Many states are using managed services for different types of things. You see many, many of them use it for their Medicaid processing. Actually, here in the state of Minnesota, you all do your own, as well as there are different states doing enterprise outsourcing, as we've been talking about. Five of them, from a state standpoint, are very recent and not so. Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, actually, we started that project with the state back in, or the Commonwealth back in 1999. We have also renewed that contract. Additionally, state of California for the child support enforcement, by our operating of their center itself and helping them with the application, they were actually able to paying over $100 million a year in penalties to the federal government. So we really had terrific gains there with them. It was a very well done project. Commonwealth of Virginia is also doing managed services. And two that I'd like to share just a little bit of data with you today is state of Texas and state of Georgia.
If I can just ask a question about the map. I noticed you have Michigan as being green, and I thought Michigan was the example of a strongly managed, centralized state-managed system. Is they just do some outsourcing? Is that the issue? But they do have a very strongly, they have a strongly centralized state system.
Madam Chairman, they do. They run some of theirs, plus they also outsource some of theirs. IBM actually runs their unemployment insurance for them, as well as we do their web portal. It's actually IBM is running their web portal.
Okay, thank you.
From the state of Texas, I wanted to give you a few metrics, I guess, examples, specific examples of what changed in the state, their view of where they were and where they want to go. State of Texas had over 38 data centers for the 27 agencies. We're moving them down to two. Additionally, the data centers that they had, some of them were not well built in the fact that they were older facilities, and consequently had things such as generators that didn't work, and during an outage, you've got to make sure that you can keep the systems up and running. Additionally, the equipment was old. They stated that it was between 4 and 10 years old. Now we will be updating our servers every 5 years, as well as the fact that we're bringing their print mail centers down from 15 to 1. So there really has been some good efficiency there. The financial benefits that the state has talked about and is in all of their plans, and as well as being evaluated right now, certainly after the first few months of the project itself, that there will be $159 million that will be saved over 7 years. Additionally, one of the things that we were able to do and we're doing as we're consolidating into our two data centers is actually returning over 187,000 square feet back to the agencies themselves to use for office space, which has been significant for them as they had no money to acquire a new building. Additionally, some of the investments that we are making is $19 million just to modernize one of the data centers of theirs that we're going to continue to use, as well as to improve another data center that we had put in place. I think what comes to mind on the next slide is really looking at that impact to state employees. That's really important. As I said, the most valuable resource that we look at are our employees themselves. All the employees in the state of Texas were offered jobs. We had 335 of them that accepted. None of the employees had to relocate, nor were any of the jobs moved out of state. Additionally, we provided those employees all a 5% increase. And we recognize their years of service with the state, which is very important, and especially from a benefit standpoint. They got immediate coverage. They didn't have to have a waiting period, and there were no considerations that were excluded for pre-existing conditions. One of the questions I know that has been asked is, you know, how does the state actually control the data and protect its interests? One of the most important things that I can say is, in a managed services environment, the state and the agencies themselves manage the business. They make the decisions, they set policy, they make the decision over how we're going to be moving ahead. IBM in this environment, or our partners, or normal managed services, we wouldn't process or make a decision on a Medicaid claim, is it good or not. We would run the computer system so that the agency itself can make that decision. Additionally, the contract, one of the most important things of a contract is actually planning for the end of that engagement, or perhaps transferring it to another service provider or the state up at the beginning. It's one of the areas that I think is very important. You make accommodations for to make sure that the assets or the computer systems would move from either service provider back to the agency or perhaps to another service provider. We actually then are able to transition the employees back, transition the employees over. If it goes between service providers to service provider, we always ask those employees if they wanted to go or not. We would never force one of our new employees to actually have to leave and go somewhere else unless they wanted to. Additionally, you look at making sure if the assets are then owned by the service provider, that we would take where those assets are in their lease stream and be able to transition that, even that owed amount, back to the next service provider. So it's really important to make these changes up front and to account for them. One of the things that I did want to mention is the fact that change is hard, and especially during that first year of a contract. It's very challenging because there are new processes that are coming in place, there are new tools that we're going to be using, and there's new equipment, hardware, and software that's going to be used. In the state of Texas, we did have a challenge, and I know it was mentioned by the MAPE representative, that there was some lost data. In that situation, we were in between moving from the new processes from the old processes. One item that hadn't been done correctly was the fact that a ticket needed to be accounted for, the fact that the backup systems were going to be changed. The backup systems were changed by a non-authorized person, and consequently we did lose the data on one hard drive on one server. We were actually able to recapture and recreate the majority of that data, but that really is part of that process of moving from an old environment to a new environment. We always learn from all of these experiences of course, we went back and made sure that the people had the training that they needed, that everyone understood what they were supposed to do when, and we continued to improve our service of processing to the state. Once that was what we call the findings on what occurred, happened, then the state went back to saying continue to consolidate the agencies. So that was addressed in a very short period of time, and the information was returned not only to the legislature, but to the governor. This is a time map of the time frame that Texas used. In 2005, they started their journey by passing a bill, and then in March 31st of 2007, IBM became responsible for the services for the state of Texas. From the state of Georgia, I thought I would just highlight a couple things that are different. It's a smaller state. It's also smaller in the type of agencies that we're bringing over, the number. Consequently, there were 8 data centers going down to 1. They had one very large thing that was going on there that we are consolidating that will be of great benefit. Right now in their infrastructure, it is old, so we will be refreshing that. But they also have 21 separate help desks, and we're going to bring that down to 1, such that when an end user has an issue, they only have 1 number to call instead of trying to figure out and remember which help desk they're supposed to call for which application they're using. So that's one of the biggest things that we'll be doing there. They've also determined that they'll be saving $180 million over 10 years. This contract right now was signed in November of 2008. We are very busy in planning and working with the state and the agencies such that on April 1st, IBM will become responsible for delivering services. I wanted to show you on this slide in particular to talk about that bubble investment that's needed. It is not insignificant as the amount of investments that need to be made up front in order to have a very well-run consolidated environment. We are doing $62 million of investment for Georgia that will then be accrued and amortized over the life of the contract such that we've increased the security infrastructure. We're adding firewalls. That's a term that a lot of people hear. Additionally, we're bringing the tools on all the different servers so that we can manage them as one operation. We're also bringing them to one email system. They have multiple right now. And then on top of that, we will also be investing $122 million to refresh and update their equipment, standardize it. Right now, they have 500 different types of desktop that you can have. And so it will be coming narrowed down. It just improves our ability to service, as well as we'll be going into a new print mail center and only one help desk. And we're going to be making some improvements.
If I can ask one question about this, and that was there any building required for this aspect in Texas? In Georgia, sorry.
They did have a very well-constructed data center. So they're coming from 8 down to only 1. And the one that they had that we're using is actually space that is leased to them by another corporation, TRW, leases that space to them. So we've picked up that lease, plus we're also going to be investing in it such that we're raising it from its tier level such that it'll accommodate everything else we're bringing in.
Would you say that all of that $62 million was or some part of that $62 million was connected with the building that you were leasing?
Yes, ma'am, it is.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That kind of builds on the question I was wondering as far as bonding. We have on our list here that one of our priorities is bonding for a tier three data center. And I'm just wondering, I don't know if you've had time to analyze Minnesota and what we have in that much detail, but do you believe that we need to necessarily bond for a data center, or is there a possibility we could do something as we've done in the other states of maybe reclaiming some other area?
Madam Chair and members, the arrangement and the contract that both Texas and Georgia have done, as well as Virginia, is that, and Pennsylvania, they do not own their own facility, so they did not have to go bond for it. Mm-hmm. And as it was, the state was currently renting from someone in Georgia, and we then have taken over that lease and will improve it. so it's now our financial responsibility. I don't necessarily believe you have to bond. In Georgia, what they were able to do is take their existing budget that they have for the agencies that they consolidated or being consolidated, and we will be able to provide better services with the upgrade of the equipment as well as an updated data center, and only one data center, and they'll still, over the next 10 years, save $180 million over out of their current budget today. Within Georgia itself, 291 employees have accepted our offers, and as of April 1st, they'll become members of our team. I understand that today I've got quite a bit of information here, so I thought perhaps I would just get to my summary and conclusion. If it pleases.
You're actually going better than we usually go. So. We don't have to finish really until quarter after. You're going at a pretty good pace.
Okay.
I think you can.
And Madam Chair, is she? Madam Chair, is she our last testifier?
What?
Is she our last testifier on the agenda today?
Yes.
Okay, because I do have a number of questions.
When
she finishes.
Okay, just do whatever you want. You can get the summary, do it. And if the questions make you go back to these, either way.
Madam Chair, remember, I'd be happy to take questions. I think this would be a good time for that.
Okay, do you want questions now?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, can you tell me what a print and mail center is?
Madam Chairman and members, it is actually the facility where they have the big printers that generate Medicaid payments and child welfare checks, and they actually then have equipment that is called the sealers and sorters and stuffers to actually put the inserts into the envelopes and send them out. They can be quite complex. The equipment, the older equipment, takes a lot of money to run, but you'll find in that it can be quite large, especially when you're looking at issuing every week, whether it's payroll checks, welfare checks, driver's licenses, things like that, would all go through that center.
All right. And if I'm right, your project in Texas, were the state agencies and different entities that were hooked up to the system, were they as geographically dispersed as Minnesota is, as far as, I know Texas is larger than Minnesota, but are we looking at a situation where you're providing services across the whole state of Texas?
Madam Chair and members, we are providing services across the state of Texas, all the way from one time zone where Houston is to El Paso is actually in a different time zone, and we do cover the entire state because there are driver's license bureaus all over and welfare offices and things. So yes, it's a diverse, distributed method of operating because that's how states exist, and yet we're still consolidating all of the computers that can be consolidated into the two data centers. Many times there will be servers left behind, and the reason they're left behind is for a special piece of work that just that local area does, and sometimes they run better and faster if they're close by. So we make those decisions with the agencies also, because we want to make sure that we're providing them the right service at the right time.
All right, and if I might, we've heard one of the discussion points from the union lobbyist was around the issue of privacy or data security and the nature of government information. Could you speak a little bit to that issue and how it's handled in other states?
Madam, remember? Absolutely. In fact, we are very diligent. We're as diligent as any state organization or federal government. Every single person that runs and works on the contract itself has a background check. We track those background checks. Some people, because of the agencies that they work in, actually have to have FBI clearance, as well as in Georgia, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation has to clear them. Additionally, you have to deal with issues such as people that are on child predators, that we make sure that all of those clearances are done. They're regularly kept up. such that that's something we take very, very seriously. So not only their security clearance, but then the training of what we do.
And Madam Chair, if I might, just one more. I'm sorry that I've slowed the committee down here, but I'm trying to get as much information as possible while she's sitting here in front of us. Going back to slide number 6, which I believe is under your Texas model, and the graphic on the bottom about the upfront investment or bubble, in the dotted line, does that reflect expenditure by state government in this case? Or I get the black line cost if no change. I see the savings, but I'm still a little unclear about the hashed line and what that represents.
Madam Chair, remember? The hashed line is actually the investment made by the service provider. This is not from the state or the state agency. The service provider then would do as we would call in business, we front end load it, but that we will make the investment necessary up front. We're able to accrue that, those expenses over the life of the contract itself, such that our profits that we make are actually at the end of the contract itself. So as you can see, the bubble, the dashed line actually goes up and it comes back down. Where it goes below the managed services cost, that's where we begin to actually gain benefits, financial benefits from the contract itself. We don't have to go and get capital equipment out or capital funds allocated to us because we can run it under the contract itself.
And I'm sorry, but I just want to follow up. I think that we
have not. I'll tell you.
I'm sorry. I look forward to that. In looking at this diagram of expenditures, I'm trying to equate that with what's before us as a committee and what we've heard presented from the agencies, and I think we're definitely looking at that investment bubble as a proposal from some of our organizations, and they want upfront money to upgrade and consolidate data centers, et cetera. But as of yet, we haven't seen that, how that line dips down and where any savings are to the system as a whole or even to particular agencies. There's kind of anecdotal information, if you will. Is this a model, in just very general terms, something that could be expected on a level from the state? I mean, is it your experience that government entities can replicate your kind of experience? And I know this is kind of getting far afield here, but they haven't as of yet been able to quantify this. I'm kind of skeptical that we'll see actual cost savings, as money will just kind of go hither and yon. But should they be able to realize these kind of savings if they do it right on their own?
Madam Chair, remember, the savings, if the agencies and the state itself were to do this on their own, not only does it take the upfront investment, because the environment has to be refreshed, or and it's because we as a service provider will not take on a risk if we can't improve that environment, if we can't bring it up to date, put on the newest tools and technology. It's too much of a risk for us to actually deliver those services, because if we fail to meet the service levels, there are normally financial penalties that are involved. In order for us to do this in a business, which we have for many, many years, and as we've shown, even the state of Pennsylvania over 10 years has been doing this, or Commonwealth of Pennsylvania has been doing this, we've seen it demonstrated not only in a state environment, in a local government environment, and then across the private sector. It's been repeated many, many times. It is a large business within IBM and other service providers, and it's something that we're quite proud of, especially I think you would find in many of the state government areas that it's really us bringing also not only this investment, but the new processes and the new tools of how you actually run a computer center. Again, talking about the ticket, if a ticket isn't being tracked for every piece of work that you can do, you never know when somebody's going to decide to unplug a computer, the week before April 15th. There's just things that we all know that to run the enterprise, you've got to look at the whole picture So yes, those benefits are there. They're being demonstrated. Texas itself now is entering its second year as we're going into the consolidation itself. They have had an outside source come in and look at the documentation to actually study what they've done. The operational benefits are there, and they have made some of the financial benefits back.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I know one of the trickiest kind of conversions, if you will, for the entity that's doing the outsourcing is to become a manager of an outsourced service agreement. Could you talk a little bit about service level agreements, what some of the pitfalls are for our state in that regard? And then after that, I got a couple questions about the contracting for how to realize those savings, but I'm curious to give us some advice on what to do and what not to do in terms of the service level agreement.
From the service level agreement, what we have found is that there are a lot of contracts that have been put in place from the state level as well as the private sector, and many of them can be a model for your use. It's really important for, as the contract is written, to make sure that you understand where you currently are. And many times the tools even to measure how long our server's up, you know, what's our response time, those things are not even in place. And so what we normally do with our customers is we begin to put those tools on so we can all measure as to where you are today and then determine where you want to be. Some of the systems will be ready to go to that future target or where they want to be immediately, and some will take some time to get there. But it's important to look at where the agency performance is today. There are service levels for things such as, is the application up and running and available for use? Do the desktop work? As I call the help center, and within 60 seconds, somebody can answer the phone. So there are a number of different items that need to be put in place. Something else that we're normally used to seeing in an outsourcing or managed services environment is that there are firms out there that actually do work in helping states, local governments, or businesses get ready and put in place the different agreements. It's normal in our business to work not only with the state or the entity itself, but then to have someone that is actually helping them and working with the entity that they themselves to get the best contract that they can.
Follow up if I could. Okay. Thank you. How transparent is an organization like IBM able to be? And in these kind of situations, typically your organization is probably in general able to out-negotiate us. And are you willing to expose your entire cost structure and profit structure so that the citizens of Minnesota know that we're not paying an excessive profit to your organization? How transparent can you be?
We can be, Madam Chairman and team member, we can be very transparent in looking at the price per resource unit. IBM as a whole, as a corporation, will not disclose our profits. There is one organization within IBM that will actually show those. We have a whole group of people that support federal government, and federal government is in an arrangement called a cost-plus environment, where it's actually determined what profit, at most profit, that we can make. Those numbers are available to the GAO, and so we're used to working in that area. What we do show, and we will do with the state, is to take on a piece-by-piece basis what makes up our price, such that you could look at what it's costing us today, and then here on each of the different line items, what does it take to run a call center, what does it take to run the servers. We would show our price on a line-by-line breakout so that you would see more than just a big group, huge number. But as we are a firm for profit, I'm not able to disclose what those are.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I think my question has to do with your chart on page 6 there.
Yes.
About how many years would you say that chart would maybe cover? It's the one that has the upfront investment bubble and so on. But how many years would you think that goes over?
Madam Chairman and members, you would see this, the shortest period of time you would normally see this being used in this type of investment is a 5-year contract. Normally, we would look at between 7 and 10 years, depending on the size of the investment that would have to be made, because you want to be able to help the state or the company that you're working for to be able to flatten out their payments over time. It's sort of, I think, like a car. You have a 3-month or a 3-year or 5-year type of a car payment. But normally five years is usually the shortest that you see.
Well, Madam Chair, just as a follow-up, I think that's one of our issues that we brought up, I think, the last time to contend with once again now, is that we look at funding these things generally over 2 years and then maybe another 2 years, and we kind of go through these things, and there is no real state ability so far that I know of, unless we create something new that allows us to look at these kinds of things over a larger time frame and make stable commitments to them over a longer time frame so we truly can do this. Every time we're doing this on a 2-year only, it is just is not really relevant, and it keeps us from knowing and seeing and dealing with this in this kind of way. I think it's really legitimate, but I think we got to look at, I think these are really great, I think really good information to have. I think we also got to look at how we fund these in order to really realize what we're trying to get at here.
And we have to look at, we know we can never bind another oncoming legislature to an appropriation. But we do. When I was on LCMR, we really did make year commitments and things like that. People just kind of had to trust that it was really in the interest of the state to keep going in that direction, you know, as much as it was in the interest of the country. So, and that's, again, why I kind of like the idea of a bonding, because commitment is clearly out there.
That's good.
Okay. Let's get a Mason.
Madam Chair. First of all, IBM is one of our major companies, so we're very, very proud of IBM. Regarding the data center, there's a lot of things that are going on in my mind, and I'll try to summarize my question. First of all, the other day when we were told about the condition of our data centers, it's atrocious, absolutely no question. But when I'm looking at the Texas data center, where you have pre-managed versus the managed services, what I'm trying to figure out is what the big difference is under the managed that we as a state could not do if we gave our staff the ability, and going back to Representative Kiffmeyer's comment, if we were adequately funding the system that's in charge of all our technology. Again, the other day, the question was, normally if the legislature is trying to decide between services for people versus new equipment, it's the services for people that we've been funding. And so is it really that your company can add that much to the service provided, or is it the fact that the state has to make a contract with you that they are going to buy, they are obligated to pay you, or they're not obligated to pay their staff to do a job? That probably could be a predicament, but that's kind of my simple question.
What I'd like to go back is to the top of this slide where we actually show the different stages, the stage 1 through 5. There are a number of states who have decided to take on this journey themselves. State of Michigan, for some of their systems, is doing that. They do it. Had, as I talked about, unemployment insurance is actually with IBM, and there's some other companies that are working there for them. But they have decided to take the path of going through the stages, stage by stage, as they go through on their own. They've been on a 7-year journey, and I don't know that they're quite at stage 4 yet. Whereas when you bring in a managed services provider, the expertise that we have, our core competency is running computer systems. It's the best that we can with the latest tools, with the latest processes. We've got methodologies for going in and being able to, in a very short manner of time, within a 24-month period, to consolidate the agency. There's actually a lot of things that need to be done that needs to be planned for. When you move a computer center and applications themselves from one center to the other, there's always, if you were to look at Medicaid, if we were to use that as an example, Medicaid system may actually be running on a mainframe and some servers and have some data. What you actually have to plan for is we have to put equipment in the new center where you're going to go ahead of time. And then you've got to study to make sure that all of the pieces of equipment and the applications that you're going to consolidate all go at one time and you know which ones they are. Additionally, we don't take down that system. We bring it up on the new location and fully test it before we shut this one off. So there's things like that and those methodologies and that a service provider, IBM as well as many others, are able to help leapfrog or jump from a stage one, stage two to stage five quickly. And that's the benefit that people, companies like ours can do.
Thank you.
Representative Winkler, and then I think we'd like to let Ms. Wells hit her summary pages, anything that she hasn't hit on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's not really, I guess, a question. It just seems to me it's a identification that we have risk no matter which way we go. We have risk if we don't do anything and we leave, I think, our data in the kind of state it's in. We have risk if we decide that we can do this kind of consolidation ourselves and can become good at what IBM does and what their core competency is and other providers. And we have risk if we decide that we are going to be a good manager of outsourced services. And, you know, frankly, none of these things sound all that appealing to me. And unfortunately, I don't really know that we're going to ever know what was the best choice. You know, this is a very good presentation. It doesn't give me any greater confidence in cost savings or numbers or achievements than anything else we see. I mean, there's, you know, everybody who presents their proposal is presenting what they want to do for their organization. I think it'll be very hard for us to make a decision based on least risk, best opportunity, and most and greatest likelihood of success, because we're not going to be implementing it. Other people will be. And I guess the best thing in my mind that we can do is embark on one course, set out some milestones for what we want to see, and then expect some reporting back, and then actually have to follow through ourselves to look at the milestones and maintain some amount of interest in what we're seeing. Otherwise, it just seems like we'll be launching a ship and hoping it comes back to us one day.
Well, I would like to, why don't we let Ms. Wells finish her last concluding comments, and then we'll continue this discussion no matter what. So,
put to the end.
Yeah.
I really think, and I know our organization believes that managed services are really the best option for the state at this point in time. You, as well as every state, are facing massive budget deficits, and you've got antiquated equipment. It's one way to allow the state to get ahead and be able to operate effectively without having to put those upfront capital costs, such as the state of Texas and the state of Georgia neither had to do that. Their budgets, the current allocations of the current budgets to run their IT from the other agencies coming together, they were actually then able to show a savings from that. As well as the fact that with vendor accountability, you've got someone that it is their job to run your systems. They report at a very detailed level on a monthly basis. There are financial penalties for them not providing those services. But more than anything, there are things worse than financial penalties. And most of the organizations that run this type of business for states, especially in government, the worst thing that can ever happen is to have your name in a newspaper. So let me assure you that there is a lot of work that goes on to make sure that that doesn't happen. So that, you know, that is the dedication that we feel, especially in the security and the disaster recovery capabilities. It's hard to be able to make changes. in the state of Texas, one of the data centers actually is in the basement of a building in Houston, which with the floods and the hurricanes that they get, obviously that was one of the first ones we vacated. There's just things that have evolved over time that need to be fixed. And basically, from a managed services provider coming in and bringing their expertise, we believe that that would be the best choice for Minnesota. Additionally, we've been looking and compiling an example business plan for Minnesota based on some of our experience, and we'll be able to have that for your consideration here in the next couple of weeks. I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Just one comment relative to Representative Winkler's statements about having three alternatives, each with their own set of risks and possible benefits. There is a way through procurement processes to actually have the three different models compete against each other. And in that case, you write the RFP less about the trees and more about the forest, if you will, so you articulate the business outcomes and the things you want to accomplish as compared to designing it down to such a level that one of the three couldn't actually submit a proposal. So that might be something we want to explore in a conversation with OET. Could we structure an RFP that would allow these different models? And I asked the question of the union representative for that very reason, to see whether or not the state actually, OET, could submit a competitive proposal, if you will, to a state RFP. It's not common, but it is something that I think we would want to move to from a strategy standpoint with a lot of different procurements. So just, I think there is a solution to that three-way conundrum.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And just a comment as well to Representative Mason, who I think made a comment before, and it's mainly just because he happened to make it, not because of anything in particular, but that we make choices between IT and people. I see it as IT is there to serve people, to make our employees more productive, more quickly.
It's never been, when you get into that thing about
yes.
a target to be determined, Mason is more correct than you are.
Madam Chairman?
Let me just say in the Senate, because the Senate's more, it's easier to trash the Senate than the House. when it's Don Dutzup will get up and say, I want this amount for technology, Linda Berglund will get up and say, I will save 3 million kids with that amount of money. So Representative Mason, you're both right.
And that's why I didn't want it to be yeah. sure that I wasn't making any particular point
no.
to the well put and certainly understood it, and you're correct. As the freshman legislator, I certainly will bow to your many years of tremendous experience. But I do think, for the record, do want to say that, you know, IT can make all those needy people's services get done faster, quicker, more efficient, not lose things. It can be a part of the solution. And I think we wanted to.
Yeah. That's why we told every time when we've been having a conversation with OEC that, you know, your most sympathetic committee, no matter what kind of rotten questions we ask, is probably here. So, don't.
Madam Chair,
sure.
I'd like to make one more point.
Sure.
One of the things that you have done that the other states have done also is you've really taken that first step because you've got OEC. As the CIO from City of Minneapolis also stated, governance is also really, really important. All the states that I've mentioned and those that are well-run and managed, they have an organization similar to OEC. In Georgia, it's the Georgia Technology Authority. In Texas, it's the Department of Information Resources. Their main job is to manage the managed services provider.
No.
And they are actually the conduit between the agencies. And their job is very important to govern and make sure that everything is done as it should be and working hand in hand on a daily basis with the service provider.
Okay. One question?
No, thanks,
not. Okay. Okay. Well, thank you very much. This was useful.
We didn't do the minutes.
Oh, we did.